Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, hello, Chris Evans here. Welcome to this week's edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with our pals at Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, the hilarious Russell Howard chats his brand new travel and comedy show Stands Up to the World on Sky One. Acting superstar Mark Strong tells us what to expect from Disney's upcoming live-action film Cruella. The awesome Billie Piper discusses her directorial debut, Rare Beasts, and the dynamic duo of Daisy Haggard and Chris Addison get us excited for Series 2 of their brilliant show Breeders. All of that and so much more to come. Now, Dapper Dave, tell us, who's the first of our guests today?
Whether he's performing to thousands or making telly from the comfort of his childhood bedroom, you're guaranteed a laugh. His new three-part travel and live comedy show Stands Up to the World starts this Monday at 9 p.m. on Sky One. So it's time for the globe-trotting giggle machine that is Russell Howard.
Morning, Russell.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Very well. How are you doing?
I'm feeling good.
So, there's a break in lockdown and then there's going to New Zealand and Australia to crack on with your job, experiencing quarantine first and then being hit by the potential trauma that is normal life again. Tell us more.
It was, so basically we had these shows in New Zealand and Australia that were already on sale. And in order to do them, we had to stay in a hotel for 2 weeks and then we were able to do it. So we were really lucky and, kind of travelled around, did 30 shows in New Zealand and Australia and hung out with Sam Neill and Tim Minchin. We did some sheep shearing and we went yowie hunting. We sort of experienced this sort of future past that we're all craving. It was so incredible. I felt so lucky to be able to kind of wandering around a place that was COVID-free and do, you know, gigs that weren't socially distanced. It was really, really brilliant.
Yeah.
I felt really charmed. And what we tried to do is, you know, film as many shows and sort of have as much fun and sort of present like a really uplifting, hopefully joyous travel show that celebrates the beauty of people. That was the aim, you know?
Yeah, and the comedy is the jam in the sandwich, but the context is what's fascinating about it all. So you go into quarantine for 14 days in New Zealand and then you let out and you meet your film crew on the street and your senses are assaulted by normal life again and you look visibly shocked. You weren't aware that you could shake hands and then you go and see people and they're picnicking and tell us what that was like, because it was like you were almost transported to a different planet and very few people in the world will have experienced that, because the people in New Zealand, it would have been graduated for them. We don't get to do it because we don't do what you do for a living. So you're one of the few people in the world that sort of went to outer space and did a spacewalk.
That's exactly what it felt like. Yeah, it was so like it's somebody coming near you. Like, again, you just realize how kind of freaked out you've become by other people approaching. And then you realize, like, I could hug people at gigs. People were coming up to me and hugging me. It was so weird and exciting. I've never left a hotel like that. I felt like I was in the Beatles. To kind of, you know, but to leave a hotel and have people greet you, and then you do these shows, and obviously the people in New Zealand and Australia realise that you've been sat in a hotel room on your own for 2 weeks, so they're so appreciative of you, and you're so appreciative of them because you get to do what you love. I'm sure musicians and actors are the same. It's that thing where it doesn't matter. You'll go. I sat in a room on my own for a fortnight just to experience what it's like to do my job again, because I adore it. You know what I mean? It was almost like this quest to get back to your happy place, really.
And safe to say there was a lot of love in the room.
It was great. It was amazing, yeah. And there are brilliant people, the Kiwis and the Aussies. Really fascinating. We met some wonderful... I met a lady called June in Queensland. It's a wonderful pink-haired lady, and she's a yowie hunter. Do you know what that is?
No, tell me.
It's the Australian version of Bigfoot, and June has been on a quest to find the yowie for many years, and I spent the afternoon with her, and apparently the way to try and lure one in is by tobacco and alcohol. So we put
hang on, Russell. In that case, I found all the Yowies in the 90s, mate. I can tell her where they are.
Well, this is it. It was so wonderful, though, being in the middle of this kind of forest, putting down, you know, a packet of fags and some Fosters, and then doing mating calls to try and bring the Yowie. But we couldn't find him. But it's sort of that. There's something I love about travel, when you sort of meet the underbelly of a place and you sort of meet the dingle dodies of each land, you know, and you just end up having these kind of mad little days. And then the great thing about this show is we were filming these experiences, and then I would chat about it, and the stand-up and the kind of adventures, if you like, is sort of intercut, so it feels like one fluid show. It's really fun.
No, it's clever. So what you're doing is basically you're recording, or you're creating, recording first of all, then reflecting on and creating the narrative for the show, which is the voiceover for the show, which is the stand-up that's happening in between your experiences.
Yeah. So it's cool. It just feels like a slightly different way of doing it. And then it makes, because you always do this when you travel. I bet musicians do the same. You have these lovely little stories that you can chat about if you're in like Helsinki or, you know, Washington or whatever. But they're not funny when you come back home. But if you can prove that you hung out with Sam Neill on his vineyard and spent a good half an hour massaging his pig, then that is funny because you've shown the evidence. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of this—it's really fascinating.
Great, and of course, these 3 hours of telly, which sound amazing, they sound potentially award-winning hours of telly. These would not have happened had it not been for lockdown.
Yeah, well, do you know the funny thing is, the plan was to do this kind of show where we're going to sort of travel around Europe, almost as a response to kind of Brexit, to kind of like just travel around, you know, Sweden or Copenhagen or Germany, and do stand-up shows and write a new hour for each place. And then that couldn't happen. And we had these gigs already booked. So we were like, oh, why don't we just do it in New Zealand and Australia? So yeah, hopefully we'll do some more in the future. And yeah, because I think what I love about it, I'm so fortunate. And I feel like people must feel this when we get to travel. It's those amazing moments in life where you meet people, or you create a memory, or something happens that's so unique and different and yet the same, that there's such a commonality and a connection that we all have. And that's what I love the most. I love the little similarities and differences between cultures, and then chatting about it on stage is, it's the most fun. And hopefully I feel like we all have a real desire once COVID's beyond in a couple of years to sort of travel the world and see places that blow our minds.
It's cool, Russell. It's so cool. You have a stand-up tour. We haven't really talked about that, but it all sells out anyway, so I don't think we need to.
but we can.
World tour tickets at russell-howard.co.uk. Great to talk to you, my friend. Good luck with the show. Good luck with the tour. Have a lovely bank holiday weekend. Thanks, Russell.
Thanks, pal. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
From the terrific Temple on Sky One to pretty much any decent movie you've ever seen, he never fails to hit the bullseye. His new movie, Cruella, is out on Friday, and here to tell us why every man and his Dalmatian should watch it is the nicest bloke in the business.
Really
it's
is.
Mark Strong!
Really is. Cruella, massive film, out this Friday, Sky, on Disney Plus, via your Sky Q, or in theatres. The cinemas are back open. Now, how much can you tell us about it? How are you going to whet our appetite without giving too much away? Your character is pivotal in the plot. Mm-hmm. You are surrounded by other acting gold. Fill your boots. Off you go.
Well, Emma Stone is the lead, and she's amazing.
Yeah.
Not only in the film, but as a person. Emma Thompson plays this icy, vicious kind of baroness who's a laugh.
Baddie, and I'm proper her, baddie.
Yeah, proper baddie. Yeah. I mean, great as well. And I'm her butler. So I'm sure the reason I was cast is because you assume I'm the bad guy, and I am on her team,
right,
the bad guy team. But there is a moment in the film where you realise that things aren't quite what they seem.
Okay, now this is, Disney are doing this a lot now. They're going back, they're going pre-movies where characters who have become established and, you know, usually have some psychological curveball going on that drives them to this, I have no idea what this must be like, by the way, this megalomaniacal kind of existence. But they're going back to their roots and perhaps describing how come they ended up like this, like Cruella did in 101 Dalmatians. So, can you just give us, if people haven't seen 101 Dalmatians, can you tell us about Cruella in that and then give us a hint of what we might learn about her in this?
Yeah, well, Cruella de Vil is a sort of fabulously evil character who famously made a coat out of Dalmatian fur That's how nasty she is. But this, very cleverly, what it does is it gives you this evil sort of person at the end of the movie, and the whole movie is an origin story. It's kind of her as a kid growing up. So brilliantly, what happens is by the end, when she's this vicious, evil, nasty person, you're with her, you're on her side.
Right.
Because you've learned why she's become like she has.
The trauma, the stuck energy.
Yeah, exactly.
The origin stories. So, but writers do this anyway, don't they? So the reason characters are so good anyway is because writers create a backstory that sometimes, often, we don't see, and that is their untold origin story.
I'm not sure, actually, if this was ever her proper origin story or whether it was invented in order to kind of deliver Cruella to the public in a kind of sympathetic way.
Right.
But it deals with her at school and then her being kind of bullied in her life. Her family structure isn't kind of cool. So by the end, as I say, you kind of, you're on her side, and it does feel as if there will be more.
Which is handy.
Yeah.
You've almost said too much there. So your character, he's not got loads and loads and loads of lines, but his presence is ever felt.
Well, I think that's why I was cast. You know, they thought everybody would just assume I was the bad guy. But brilliantly, he's rather mysterious for the first half of the film. You don't really know what's going on with him. And then there is this sort of pivotal moment, and then you understand.
Right, now, protective butlers in past epics gone by. There's a long list of them. Did you focus in on any of your favourites from the past? John Gielgud in Arthur, for example. Michael Caine in Batman, for example.
Anthony Hopkins in Remains of the Day, yeah. Well, we know, don't we, as Brits, what that character is. So I had a fantastic outfit. I was wearing tails, the finest, you know, and I just basically stood around being very obsequious, but knowing.
Yeah, I was literally going to say that, because it's the knowing, it's the wisdom, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So he's like that.
And is the obsequiousness of those otherwise very wise characters, is that just a cover? Because it's the cover of a fool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of Jeeves and Worcester, do you remember? I mean, it's the idea that the butler's actually more intelligent and knows more than the person they're serving.
Right, Emma Thompson, tell us about you and Emma hanging out on set, because I remember she was going to be there the day that you went off to film for the first
time. Well, that's a great thing when you know you're doing a film with somebody that you know you're going to want to hang out with. I've met her a couple of times over the years, but she's great fun. You know, she's really, you know, lovely person.
She's naughty.
Talk to anyone. Yeah, a bit wicked, you know. And actually, downtime on set, you have more of that than you do when you're actually on camera.
Right.
So you want to make sure that you're with someone you're going to have fun with.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was a lot of fun. And Emma Stone, the same.
In comparison to other pictures you've appeared in, you know, give us, like, has there been a bigger one this scale-wise, budget-wise? What's the next one down?
Well, the big, big superhero movies like John Carter and Green Lantern, upwards of $250 million. The irony is, I know. And people tend to review the budgets rather than the actual movies.
Oh,
so
dear.
If they're not amazing, they tend not to do very well. But those big movies, a lot of CGI. That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas this, although it was pretty big budget, I don't think it was quite as much as that, but pretty big budget, it was all real. It was all there. I did three big ballroom sequences in the movie, all different outfits. I mean, Jenny Bevan, the costume designer, should get a mention, because she is a genius. I mean, the fashion in this film is unbelievable. The soundtrack is amazing.
Yeah.
That's something, actually, that a lot of people should go and watch it for.
Well, no, I mean, the reviews that I'm hearing, and we have to be careful what we say about it, because it's not review time at the moment. We've got to keep our powder dry, because that's one of the deals that we do with Disney and other companies, and we've agreed to that. Of course we haven't. We don't want to ruin it for anyone. But people are saying it is off the charts eye candy. But like you say, the soundtrack's unbelievable.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Last time she was on, she'd barely slept and was still bleary-eyed from a night on the tiles. Quite frankly, we're hoping for more of the same. She's written, directed and stars in the new movie Rare Beast. It's in the cinemas now, and on the line now is a rare beast indeed. It's the brilliant Billy Piper!
All right, Ms. Beastie. How are you with that?
It's fine. Yeah. I've been called worse.
A rare beast indeed. Thanks, Dapper Dave. You know we were married once, don't you? I'm not talking to Billy. She knows I was married once to you muppet. Hi, darling.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. So, this is a movie that's been on the back burner for a while. Of course, it enjoyed a British or London Film Festival release a couple of years ago. We all went to the premiere. It was all very exciting. And now it's in the cinemas. And let's first of all talk about that 4-star review in Empire magazine and why it's so important to you.
Well, yeah, amazing. It is really important to me. You know, it's funny because I don't normally read reviews at all. People sort of usually send me the good ones and I avoid everything else. This time I've sort of maybe unhelpfully, but on this one, I did look at it, and I am so thrilled because I don't know, it's been on a real journey, the film, and to have people get it and find some sort of relief in it is a relief to me.
Yeah. And relief is the ultimate celebration in show business, isn't it, I suppose?
I think it is. Like, you can get a sort of an extreme high from things, but it's so short-lived. But the overwhelming sensation is a sense of relief. I wish I could say otherwise, but that really is what it is.
Right. Now, I've seen the film. It is amazing. 4 stars in Empire magazine. And Empire really do know what they're talking about. So Billy wrote it. She directed it. How very dare she? And she stars in it. How was all that in the mix?
It was a lot. The oversight, I think, was being in it. Just because it meant that I couldn't sort of sit in the role as a director as much as I probably would have liked to, but I won't do that again. And that said, there was a sort of shorthand to having me play the lead role because it was just one less person to worry about.
Or pay.
Or pay. Certainly didn't get paid.
But this was all, of course, pre I Hate Susie. Now, your world, your career world has exploded. Let's face it, it was always doing pretty darn well. But exactly how busy are you at the moment?
Last week was insanely busy, but I'm actively going to take some time off now until or September, and then start writing I Hate Susie 2.
All right, good for you. And yeah. And Rebby, so can you pitch it to the unsuspecting public in a minute?
Okay, what can I say about it? So, I mean, it covers a lot of themes, but broadly speaking, it's about a woman and her relationship with herself, ultimately. So you sort of feel like it's about a dysfunctional relationship with a guy, but what you realise is it's a story about her own struggle with modern romance and modern feminism. She's a professional woman, she's a single mum, she's the ultimate nihilist, and she's just trying to navigate this world that we live in, which is in many ways quite a toxic one. So it's all of those sort of themes, but as it is quite heavy and it bleak in places, but I would argue that it's quite funny, and the comedy is coming through the crisis of the story.
No, it is funny and it's really off the wall. I love it. You know, I love it.
Yeah, it's quite strange.
Yeah, but it's beautifully shot as well. There's a little bit of Susie in her though, isn't there?
Well, I suppose there is, just by virtue of me playing both those part, and also the things that I'm interested in is sort of telling a sort of honest story about what it costs to be a woman, and so in that sense, yeah, it would make sense of those crossovers in those characters
and conflict and self-regard and, you know, self-observation
and lots of vulnerability and lots of things that we're sort of scared to talk about because the world doesn't always want to receive sort of seeing women in these ways.
Yeah, no, I was talking to somebody, I mentioned it to you a couple of weeks ago, a fellow actor of yours, and he says what he admires mostly about, actually not mostly, but one of the things was your brutal honesty in your performance and your writing. But this directing business, I mean, when did you get so good at that all of a sudden?
I think I've always loved films, as you know. I've always studied films, as you know, and I've always written, but never with focus. It's always been more of a hobby. When I actually made this a focus, when I finished writing it, I just sort of thought, there's no way I can really hand this over to someone else because I can see every frame of it. Yeah. And what I realized about making it was, obviously, as an actor, you're on set all the time, so there's loads of benefits to that in terms of filmmaking. But how much my, like, passions as a kid watching TV and films inform my sort of ability to visualize things. So I would always say to parents who freak out about their kids watching too much telly, like, don't worry about it.
It's such a great take.
It's really, 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 I feel like quite made by TV and film as a person and as a professional. Like my, you know, TV was my nanny as a kid.
Well, it's lovely to talk to you on the radio because that's what I do for a living. but it's also just nice to have you in my life. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
It never gets any less weird interviewing your ex-wife about her living.
It doesn't sound weird.
Well, it feels it, let me tell you, if you think about it too much.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. I'm Chris Evans. We've heard from three magnificent guests already, but there's still so much more to come. Strictly Come Dancing superstar Oti Mabuse chatting her fabulous new book, Dance with Oti, The Bird Jive. Mindfulness and meditation teacher Michael James Wong shares his guide to life in his new book, Senbazaru, Steps to Hope, Healing and Happiness. And multi-award-winning children's author Frank Cottrell Boyce spills the beans on his enchanting new novel, Noah's Gold. All of that and more still to come, so let's get right back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
Everyone knows that parenting's really, really easy, but for the sake of comedy, our next guest, imagine it's a challenge. Series 2 of Breeders starts tonight at 10 p.m. on Sky One, and here to tell us more is the star of the show and the writer that brings the ankle biters to life. It's Daisy Haggard and Chris Addison.
Good morning, you two.
Morning, Chris.
Morning.
How are you both?
Good, thank you.
All right, how'd you feel today?
Excellent.
Do you know what? We're really high up. It's a beautiful day for the first day in weeks and weeks and weeks. The view out of here is amazing. Yeah. It's like the first time I've seen anything like this in a year. It's great.
I haven't seen this much sky.
It's okay, beautiful.
And it's brand new season day, season two Breeders. So for people, it's about not preaching to the converted. We can talk along and we can verse to the converted, but we need to get more people into the Breeders flock. So round off season one, if you can, in a nutshell, between you.
Oh, God.
Oh, goodness.
Who's in it and what do they do?
Okay,
first of all?
Fine. Well, Daisy's in it. You're in it, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Who else is in it with you?
A guy called Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman. And they play parents Paul and Ali. Daisy plays Paul and Martin plays Ali.
Yeah.
And they have two kids, Luke and Ava. And our show is basically about how you love your children more than anything in the universe, but nothing in the universe makes you angrier than your own kids. That's
yeah.
it.
True. And it's whether you can keep a lid on that. And when you have a disposition, psychological disposition like Martin's character, that's more difficult than not.
Yeah. But we like to think that that's not that unusual, that most of us kind of the big response we tend to get to it is people saying thank god thank you for saying that, thank goodness it's not just me.
I get that a lot.
It's a bit Leonard Rosser. Do you remember what was the show? It wasn't Rising Damp, but it was the other one that he was in.
Reggie Perrin,
when he used to do you remember, you used to get the flashbacks of hippopotamuses and things, what he was really thinking and what he was trying not to say. And that's what sort of Martin, that's what we all do as parents. So what were the trials and tribulations, the highlights of season one to the unconverted?
Well, there were younger children, so it was that journey, really. Sleepless nights, sort of seeds of anxiety with Luke.
He became a little anxious boy, didn't he?
And then
at the end of the season, he sort of nearly died. He got meningitis, and so for the last two episodes, he was sort of in hospital, which we filmed about 400 yards that way. So that's where we left them, with him just recovered, wasn't it?
Yes.
All right, and so we rejoin, and there are birthdays. There's one teenager, as opposed to there not having been any last season. Now, I only watched episode one. Rachel watched three. She can't be with us this morning because she's in another room watching the whole of the French reunion.
Yeah.
She could be with us. But she says, you know, this goes even deeper. And why wouldn't you do that? Because, you know, it's such a rich well of content, isn't it, being a parent, especially nowadays.
Yeah.
Especially if you're being very honest and open about it, wearing it quite lightly on your sleeve, because there's comedy involved too.
Well, and this is the next phase of parenting, isn't it? Which I'm not at yet. So I see this show as like a sort of warning of my future. I've got a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, so I'm kind of where the last season was.
Right.
And then I
doing this one, I got more nervous about my future.
Yeah, because we've moved everything on 5 years with this season. So the kids are that bit older. We realised that when in doing that, that we basically set ourselves a trap because suddenly we had two new characters to write for. Yeah, we thought, yeah. Wait a minute, these children didn't say anything last time. And now, of course, they're sort of 10 and 13 and they're answering back.
And they're stealing away to their rooms. They're watching things on laptops. What are they watching? Why are they watching it? Are they listening to what we can hear, or are they playing an alternative soundtrack to cover over what they're really watching and what they're really listening to? Things like that.
Yeah, things like that. Things that are very familiar to you.
So
how many dinner parties or Zoom parties have you had to have over the last 14 months with your pals to secretly harvest material?
Do you know what? When we started the show, Martin and Simon Blackwell who sort of created the show, we sat and talked like in ways that we'd never talked before about, because, you know, we're hidebound, middle-class, middle-aged, white English dudes. We don't talk. And we had to sort of sit and talk about what it was like to be a parent in a way that we'd never done before. And then in the writer's room, it's the same. Like when we brought the writers in, we have a fantastic team and everybody just talks about their own fears and failures and guilt. It's like somebody's paying us to do therapy, essentially.
Well, that's what it's all about.
That sounds amazing. I'm a bit jealous I don't get to be part of that.
Come in.
Daisy,
come in for fun.
Were you tempted to give them any tips on actually talking to each other about feelings and things that might matter as a woman?
I mean, it's tempting, but it sounds like they're doing quite well.
It's gangbusters straight from the off. Martin's character, there's a birthday, and then he does that thing which I can hear myself. Can you hear yourself, us, when he's talking?
Yep.
It's mad, isn't it? And it's all projection, isn't it? Of course it is. And you don't get the kids what they want for their birthday. Get them what you think they should have.
Goes into the photo shoot.
Or actually what you think they should want.
That's what my parents did.
Yeah, because we want to disguise the fact that this is what we think they should have, which this is actually what they want. They just haven't realised it yet.
Yeah, you want to get your children something improving and they just want to just chill out.
And don't you remember, just like when I think back at presents, it's always the one I wanted that I remember the joy, because it was so rare.
Yeah.
And it was normally someone else
Why
that gave
do we
it to
do
me.
That? Because we've all been kids. We know how this story ends on birthdays.
Yeah.
Yet we still resist it as parents. Is it because it's cognitive dissonance, isn't it?
Because you fear for your kids, right? So everything that you do for your kids is because you go, but if I give you that, then you're going to go down the wrong path. If I give you the improving, if I give you a chemistry set, you'll cure cancer. But if I give you a bike, you're going to get run over on the road. That's essentially what we're thinking.
I mean, you might have loads of fun in between and meet your future partner or join a rock band with your pals down the park, but that's not the point.
Exactly. We're thinking about the long game here. This isn't just a birthday. This is your future, young man.
Great to see you too. Have a lovely day. Daisy Haggard and Chris Addison, let's give them a cheer. Can we give them a cheer before they go?
Cheers, Chris.
Thanks, guys. Yay.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
She's a Strictly Come Dancing stalwart that really knows her way around a dance floor, which is a good job considering the title of her new book. Dance with OT is out now, so ladies and gentlemen, listen closely as we talk with OT about Dance with OT. It's the always lovely OT Mabuse!
Hi, OT.
Hi.
It's great to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you.
You're our favourite, isn't she?
Yes.
She's our favourite. And we don't say that to all the boys and girls from Strictly that come in here.
Okay, thank you. The money will come in later for saying
good.
That.
Okay. You could just exchange it for a copy of my new book. We could swap books.
Let's do that. Okay. I'd love that.
By the way, they don't look dissimilar.
I mean, yellow is a vibe.
Yeah, they wouldn't clash in the window of any good bookstore, would they?
No, they feel like New Year's in May.
All right, before we talk about your book, your wonder and your genius and your stealth and your grace on the dance floor, tell us about OT Mabuse. Tell us about how you were as a child, because your book is a kid's book.
Yes.
And when and how you got into dancing, your upbringing generally. Just tell us a bit more about yourself.
Well, I started dancing in South Africa when I was 4.
Right.
And my mom is the one who put me in dance school, me and my sisters. And we've been dancing all our lives. Dancing was that thing that we knew we did from Friday, Saturday till Sunday. We had no weekends free. We were just constantly dancing, either traveling to Blackpool or Germany, or actually just training and doing training camps.
And so did you have some kind of special spark straight off the bat? Did people see that in you, or did you develop it very quickly?
I don't think I even had a choice. I was 4 and my mom was like, you're gonna do it because I don't have time to get you into anything else. But I really just loved it because, one, it was all I was doing all my life.
Right.
But I think dancing, as everybody knows, it just makes you happy and you get to express yourself. You also wear pretty dresses and makeup. She's nice.
See, my little boy Eli, he's 8 now. He's 9 on Tuesday, and he loves dancing. And he took hold of your book last night, literally wrestled it out of my arms. And when we put music on, it's funny because, and this is all true, this all happened in the Evans household last night. So I'm listening to the new Delamitri album. So we've got that on, and then he has your book. So he starts adding extra bits to Delamitri's songs that they haven't thought of yet, and they fit and they're in tune whilst literally exploding with energy. Did you find that as a child? Eli has so much energy inside him, and when he hears music, right, he isn't thinking about it. The music is moving him.
Yes.
It's actually moving him. It's like he's an oscillator. You know, sometimes you can see oscillation on a computer screen, mm-hmm. the dynamics of the sound. His body looks like that, and he can't help himself. Is that how you felt?
All the time. I feel like even with the music playing now in the background,
I'm
clicking and dancing to it. Music just has that power to really influence you, change your mood, make your body kind of feel like it can move. And it did that to me all my life. Still
and
does
it's
today.
Funny, isn't it? Because when we're doing the show, you know, I feel differently than when we're out of the studio, when my mind sort of hijacks everything again.
Really?
But I feel more physical in the studio. But the funny thing is, the more physical I feel doing my job, the better thoughts I have, bizarrely. So when you deal your mind out of the situation, it has to perform better to get back in on the act.
Yeah.
And there's a real freedom within that.
I mean, I guess when you change and you move your body, you release certain hormones and they are feel-good feelings. And that's what, I guess, moving, exercises, running, we were talking about running, that's what it does to your body and your mind.
How fit are you?
I should be fitter than what I am. I'm not really
that God
fit.
Help the rest of us.
I'm good. I've got a lot of energy and I like to use it up, but I should be doing 10Ks, but I'm not actually. I'll do one and then I'll be like, oh, I think that's enough for the week.
But I would imagine you have to be careful because you might develop muscles that will be sort of counter to what you need on the dance floor.
Yeah, but also muscles can weaken so that when you do go back, you just injure yourselves. But running is great. Running is great for everyone and for everything as well.
Right, what about flexibility? Because I'm not very flexible. I've never been able to touch my toes. Any tips for that?
Pilates or yoga. That's
right.
Really good.
Okay.
That's really good.
I feared that's what you were going to say.
Or stretching before you run and stretching after and going day by day just so you can see your progress. It's about staying constant.
Right. When little Oti was dancing, mm-hmm. what was the first big thing that you enjoyed success in? What's the first big event?
The first big event was the South African Championships. I remember I was 8 and we work all year for that, and it's the best couples in the whole country. We come together to this one competition and it determines who is the best dancer for that year in that category.
Wow.
I was second.
you'll take second, though, won't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I'll take second.
Okay, what did the winner have that you didn't on the day?
I don't... Well, they were a lot more disciplined. They were a lot more disciplined.
See, you come across on Strictly as very disciplined.
I am, but I also have a side to me that's not... Like, I could be late. I'm that girl. You're like, OT, what do you dress like? I'm like, I don't know. I'm a bit of a mess. But then when I'm working, I become disciplined. They're like two sides.
Yeah, which I think... But one relieves the other, doesn't it? It's
yes.
great because you take a holiday from your tough self.
Exactly.
And then you need your tough self back to sort your sort of spreading self out before
yes.
you spread too much and too thinly and make too much of a mess on the floor, as it were. And by the way, you can go to dance-with-ot.walker.co.uk, which is a bit of a mouthful, so we'll put that on our Instagram page to find
you.
Out more about what she does with her husband, which sounds amazing, by the way. Do you know what? You've got so much going on and you so deserve it. So
thank
congratulations.
You.
It's really, honestly, good comes to good.
Thank
you know, and it doesn't, I don't know you very well, but I sense that you're an amazingly good person. So
thank you.
Congratulations. This book is awesome. You've got something for the kids going on. You've got something of online going on. You've got some actual dance classes going on. You've got your big ITV show starting tomorrow, The Masked Dancer, mm-hmm. ITV tomorrow, 7 p.m. And you're signed up for Strictly again this
yes,
year?
Yes, I'm going back.
When does all that kick in?
We start on the 26th of July. We always start ahead of the celebs, but I think they're going to start much later in September.
Well, Oti, it is a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, Chris.
An absolute pleasure to meet you. And her book, once again, Dance with Oti Mabuse, Learn to Dance, The Bird Jive Kids. This gorgeous kids' picture book is out now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
If you're living life in the fast lane, our next guest is your reason to pull over and take a breather. His new book, Sen Bazuru, is out today. And here with the lowdown on how we need to slow down is a man that knows exactly what unfolds when you just fold. It's the meticulously mindful Michael James Wong.
All right. Beautiful intro. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
I'm very well. There's so much in that intro. We could actually just take the different aspects of that intro. And that could be the interview, Dave. Well done. Congratulations. Michael James Wong, where were you born? Where have you been? And how did you end up here?
Well, I was born in New Zealand. I grew up in Los Angeles, and now I live in London, and it's been a nice little journey to get here.
Great combo, that. I mean, New Zealand, coolest place probably on the planet. Los Angeles, very exciting, very inspiring, lots of other things too. And then you get back to solid Blighty here. You've been here for 9 years. And so when did you start this journey of this Zen journey? Did it creep into your life? Did you bottom out? Was there a requirement for it? Was it because of your parents?
I think it was a combination of two things. One, my parents and my family had a very kind of beautiful upbringing. But at the same time, I grew up in Los Angeles, where a lot of this stuff was earlier on in the 90s, early 2000s, where it was just part of kind of the movement in the community. And I just kind of got thrown into it in my teenage years. And it kind of just stayed with me and has become a really important part of my life.
So the book is beautiful. It's absolutely fantastic. I've read loads of these books. I said this to you when you came in. And this is a real standout book. It's amongst the best that I've ever read. It's gorgeous. I ironically had to scan it yesterday because it's a whole book and we have guests on every day.
Yeah, of course.
So I had to speed read a book about not living life too quickly, which was so bizarre. Made me feel so guilty at times.
But it's beautiful though. Even though you speed read through it, the whole point about the book is that it's supposed to be simple and gentle and easy. So even if you only have 5 minutes, you can still read two of the stories, read four of the quotes, and just really get some little nuggets in there that hopefully are really helpful to your life.
Well, it was like magic because I did sort of get through it one way or another in a couple of hours, but I did feel like spookily, like you'd got me under your spell to the extent that I'd felt I'd read it completely, and I've never felt that about a book before. And there's that great phrase, isn't there? Slow is smooth and smooth is fast, you know, and there's thinking fast and slow, and there's living slow and fast. Before we get into that, tell us about my favorite bit of the book, which is never pack a bag you can't carry, which that's the new thing. I'm going to go home, write it on my bedroom wall with a Sharpie on my wallpaper, and it's staying there forever. I love that.
Oh, well, I mean, it is one of those phrases that's been with me my whole life. And obviously, shout out to my parents, Deborah Wong, Graham Wong. And that was one of those things that even when you're 8 years old and you kind of are packing for a trip and dad goes, don't pack a bag you can't carry. And then my brother Andrew goes, don't pack a bag you can't carry. It's these things that you just remember that even as a kid are so profound. But then as an adult, you're like, wow, it actually is such a nice thing to remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old kiss, isn't it? Keep it simple, stupid. Mm-hmm. And keep it light as long as you can. Light and as light as you can for as long as you can. And hopefully forever is the ultimate. Something else I love that you talk about is another phrase of mine. The last person I heard us this, do you know Anton Deck? You're aware of Anton Deck, aren't you? Was Deck. And he said, I said, do you have one rule to live by in your life? He says, yeah, go home before midnight because nothing good ever happens after midnight. Yeah. And this is something your dad told you.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing that's really important. And growing up, you always think your parents are just spouting all kinds of things. But there's a lot of wisdom that came from my parents that I didn't realize until I got older. And you know, never stay out after midnight. Nothing good happens after midnight. There's a lot of logic in that when you think sleep is great for you. But when you're a teenager, everything after midnight's amazing and fantastic. And you just need someone to go, hey, you know what? There's more to life than tonight.
Yeah, because what your dad was telling you there, without telling you, teaching from behind, if you like, it wasn't, I want you home before midnight. It was, I want you to have a great day the next day.
Yeah.
And that's the bit I didn't realise till I read it in your book. I thought, makes sense. Because actually, some things after midnight are quite fun.
Yeah,
but weighed up against what you know, what you're using up in the future, it's probably not worth the trade-off ultimately.
Yeah, and it depends on your life and your lifestyle. Obviously, things after midnight can be really fun, but most times, 9 out of 10, the next morning is not going to be the most fun. And especially if you're out late having a good time, maybe in the morning that's the time to hang out with your kids, play with your puppy, get up and do some good writing, all those kind of things. And as you kind of move through life, you start to weigh up actually what things really fulfill me.
So when you meditated for the first time, which you recount in the book,
yep.
you didn't think you got on with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just recount that for us.
So I'm a big advocate of telling a true story. And I think it's really important that when we look at things like mindfulness and meditation, people think they need to be good at it. They need to win at it. They need to accomplish it. And this is kind of the human nature of thinking, I need to be successful in all the things I do, even meditation, even the things that are supposed to support you. And so for me, in that first experience, it was actually really not fun. It was miserable because I was trying to be good. I was trying to say, how do I get from A to B? And it was that kind of moment where you realize and recognize that actually, it's not about getting somewhere. It's about you've missed the experience completely because you're just thinking ahead too much.
So what was the tipping point for you? When did you realize how to do it better?
I think where it came for me, the tipping point came when I started to recognize that the rest of my life is so busy and there's a lot of chaos, and actually meditation and moments of quiet are actually permission to not do, to not accomplish. And I had some great teachers growing up. I still have some great teachers, and it's just that constant state of remembering. And I think a lot of times as humans, we don't need to learn lots and lots of new things. We actually just need to remember all the things that we know already, but we just easily forget because there's lots of lights and bright noises around us.
All right, Zen Bazzuri, so Small Steps to Hope, Healing and Happiness. It's out today. And for more about what Michael James Wong gets up to, and it's all good for us, justbreatheproject.com is where you need to go.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
From indie cinema masterpieces to fantastical works of kids' fiction, our next guest is simply a master. His new children's book, Noah's Gold, is out now, and here to tell us all about it is a man that really has the Noah's Golden touch. It's the double-barrel brilliance of Frank Cottrell Boyce.
Good morning, Frank.
I insist on having that build-up every time I open my mouth from now on.
Well, he's available. He's not too available, because you never want to be too available, but he's available. How are you, Frank?
I'm in top form. It's great to hear you.
All right. Well, listen, this book is absolutely off the charts. It is great. You know, it is a series of sensible red flags for the next generation, dripping with humour, which is often the best way of selling the most awkward and unwanted of messages. Congratulations, my friend.
Oh, bless you, Chris.
It really is very good. All right, so tell everyone about Noah and tell everyone about as much more as you want them to know before reading the book.
It's about a school geography trip that goes horribly wrong when they're aiming to go to a kind of big warehouse, which is called the Orinoco Warehouse. But the GPS instead tries to take them to the Orinoco River. So they keep going west and west and west and west and west until they all end up marooned on a small island mm-hmm. off the coast of Ireland. And so that you've got that set up then of like a group of kids on an island with no Wi-Fi trying to tend for themselves. And I think we've been brought up to think that if that happens, then the kids will split themselves into tribes, we'll be unable to light a fire, and we'll end up eating each other, because that's what happens in Lord of the Flies or in Fortnite. But that's not what happens. They turn out to be really good. And I think, you know, they have adventures, things go terribly wrong, there are secret tunnels and there's gold, but I really want to sort of... I don't know, we live through stories, don't we, Chris? And I think at the beginning of this year, there was a story that because of the pandemic, everyone would crash into supermarkets and club each other to death with toilet rolls. And in fact, that's not what happened. You know, we all shopped for our neighbours and checked up on each other. And I think that's a bigger truth. And it's actually a harder truth to live with in a lot of ways.
Well, they
so
do
I just
say...
wanted to tell a story about kids who were good and resourceful and resilient and creative and brilliant and then find some gold.
And we're so good as a species at telling stories and loving being told stories that often, anecdotal evidence outweighs facts and stats, which can be dangerous, but that's how much we love them. So if you back them up with truth, they're all the more powerful. And the way you do it is so beautiful. But Noah, of course, is not supposed to be on or in the bus in the first place. How much do you want to say about that?
So he's gegged is a very Liverpool verb, isn't it? He's stowed away on his big sister's school trip. So quite like the fact that he was younger and smaller than the others. You know, it's his big sister who wants... I won't go into too much detail about why he wants to be there. Partly I did it just because I love a stowaway. You know, I love the stowaways in Treasure Island and things like all these stories that are on islands. I love islands and stowaways and stuff like that. So he stows away in the back of the bus and therefore nobody knows he's there. There's this good moment when the teacher does a head count and realises there's an extra kid. How could that be? That's why.
Yeah, and because he's big sis is with her mates, she, you know, and I don't want to say too much here, but she denies any knowledge of him, which is hilarious. And he keeps writing to his mum and dad from this island, and he keeps sending these letters off, hoping they're going to finally get to his mum and dad, and sometimes his nana. And he says Eve still won't. She it's like she's not told anybody that I'm her brother. It's like she's not even acknowledged to me that I'm her brother. And last time I looked, I definitely am her brother. It's hilarious, Frank.
But that whole thing about peer pressure in kids is that they do that. It's awful, but they do, you know.
And then
the letter writing thing is, sorry, Chris. Go on.
And then he gets used to it. And then he goes, you know, she's still not admitting that I'm a brother. Okay.
Yeah.
And he almost comes around to her sort of Orwellian brainwashing.
Now, that might not be.
when you set this story on an island, I know you have previous as a family in real life of being marooned on an island, which is in the prologue, which is the best prologue I've ever read of any book ever. But you also illustrate the island at the beginning of the book, where the story is set. And I love that. The second I saw it, I thought, oh, this is going to be good. Did that help you with the writing?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I love a book with a map in.
So do I.
I just love a book with a map in. I've always aspired to write a book with a map in.
Yes.
And in fact, this one, you know, I did find it hard to write at the beginning of lockdown. It's hard to concentrate again. So I thought, instead of, it's turning to work, you know, I'm sitting at a desk and zooming people, then you're trying to be creative at the same desk with the same screen. So I drew a map first and just started to imagine that. So the map came before the story in a lot of ways. I had this lovely thing, Chris, that during lockdown, I did like free Instagram creative writing lessons for kids on my Instagram, and loads of kids came to it. And it wasn't really about trying to get them to be a better writer so much as trying to get them to use their creativity to be happy. And during one of the kind of tasks that I set, I said, imagine yourself somewhere you'd like to be, because you can't go anywhere, you know, it's lockdown. And one of the kids said, and are you doing that in your work? And I thought, oh my God, I'm not, am I? So that's when I thought, I'll set this on an island, and I drew the map, and it suddenly came to life. So this was, I had this lovely, lovely, lovely time writing this book, and it was gifted to me by the kids on that account. You know, that it was their idea to take your imagination somewhere you want to be, you know?
Frank, I love you so much. Anything else you'd like to say before you go?
No, just it's lovely to be talking to you again, Chris. I've missed you. It's great. And thank you so much for this.
All right, mate. No problem at all. You're very welcome. And I hope to see you again soon. I will do. You can't wait to read the book. I read it last night. He wants to get his sticky paws all over it, but he gets it tonight, so no problem there. And let's resurrect 500 words as soon as we can. Let's do that.
Let's do that.
All right, okay. Pal. You're awesome.
God bless.
God bless to you. Frank Cotterill Boyce, an absolute genius. And this book, Noah's Gold, illustrated by Stephen Lenton, is out now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Her new Acorn TV series, Whitstable Pearl, continues on Monday. It tells the story of murder, mystery and deceit in Whitstable. Sounds terrifying. Who'd live there? Please welcome the awesome Kerry Godleyman.
Morning,
hello.
Kerry. How are you?
Hello. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm very well. Congratulations on your programme. I watched it last night. I thoroughly enjoyed every aspect of it, other than one thing. It's an amazing advert for Whitstable. And by the way, no offence to Whitstable. It's just that Vassas, who works on the show, bought a little weekend place in Whitstable. And I was ribbing him about it, not because of where it was, but because of how long he claimed it took him to get there. And then you come along and you produce this one-hour eye candy advert for the idyll that is Whitstable, don't you, Kerry?
I know, it does make the town look very appealing, doesn't it, that show?
Well, it is gorgeous, isn't it? No doubt about it. How long did you spend there, by the way?
3 months. 3 months in deep winter and deep lockdown.
Right.
So I feel like it's my town now, because I didn't see other people around when I was down there.
And it's what you call, I suppose, selective filming, because you can't tell it's the middle of winter. For a start, you will end up open water swimming, of your own volition. Let's not go any further with that. But several members of the cast end up in the sea at several different times during episode one. It looks gorgeous. So did you pick your filming days? Because it was always sunny, blue skies. Everybody come to Whitstable today.
Well, we lucked out in November. You've seen episode one. Mm. Come back to me when you see the January episodes. It's less sunny.
All right. Okay. So what do you want to say about what goes on the show? Without giving too much away, because you're really good at this, and then we'll get on to more of the eye candy in a moment or two.
It's a sort of seaside whodunit. Pearl is a local woman who is a pretty successful restaurateur. Like, she's got her own fish restaurant, But she also dabbles in a bit of private detective work on the side. And I think initially it was, you know, kind of not too challenging stuff that wasn't too sinister. And then we find her when it takes a bit of a dark turn and she finds a body of an old family friend. And I think she's sort of a bit scared she's out of her depth. So there's always that little kind of sense that she's kind of flailing a little bit. She's a little bit naive, but she's determined.
And what also this serves, or this also serves up rather, Whitstable Pearl, is the grumpiest detective inspector that television's ever seen. But we like him more for it, not less.
I know, he's super grumpy, but he's quite hunky, isn't he? So you let it slide.
No, well, that's not why I let it slide, if I'm being honest. I just like the fact that he is really sort of monosyllabic and really doesn't want to be anywhere. You know, least of all in the middle of a case far away from the smoke where he'd rather get down and
investigate. It's quite funny, though. I found that quite funny. No, the more grumpy he got, the more amused I got.
No, it was hilarious, because he wears his grump on his sleeve, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's what's kind of nice about their relationship, is that she just finds him attractive, you know, against her will, almost, because it's like he really annoys her and yet they're attracted to one another.
Yeah, but he annoys everyone second only to annoying himself, which is why which is where his vulnerability is, because he's given himself the hardest time, isn't he?
Yeah, he's trapped in his nature, and you do find out a bit more about why. I mean, it's not like he's just grumpy, he's got stuff going on. He's got baggage, Chris. They've all got baggage.
No, I get it, I understand. But I thoroughly enjoyed his grumpiness.
Me too.
He owned it.
The more grumpy he got, the more
it's brilliant. It's brilliant because it's meant, obviously that's what he's meant to be like. And you think, oh, well, he's going to warm up in a bit. He gets colder as it goes on.
And I like that because you don't want it to be twee. Whitstable is a sweet little seaside town.
Yeah.
And he just will not have it. He just isn't charmed by it. Right. And there's this whole, like, Pearl's like, but it's so adorable. Of course everybody loves this town. And he doesn't. And I thought that was very funny.
But least of all, he doesn't love himself. And we see the world as we are, not as
it is.
See
that unfold.
Yeah. Whitstable Pearl is on acorn.tv. Right. Now, this is an amazing show. Tell us more about acorn.tv and how come this is on that particular platform.
Do you know what? I don't know. I don't know that stuff. It's just that they commissioned it. And it's based on these books by Julie Wassermer. She's written 8 of these Whitstable Pearl mysteries.
Right.
And Acorn rightly recognised that it would make a fabulous television programme. So they commissioned it.
Well, they were right, because it has And You're In It. I didn't realise that Whitstable now has its own franchise, Vassos.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, of course it does. If she's got 8 books, it's a franchise, isn't it? And they're all Whitstable Pearl books.
Yeah, you're right.
You know how this works.
Right.
So what people will be massively disappointed in, as they will flock to Whitstable in their millions, because that's what happens when somebody does a great TV show and what looks like, you know, heaven on earth, they will go and they will try and find the Whitstable Pearl fish restaurant. But it does not exist. And this is a forewarner. We must forewarn people. By all means, go to Whitstable. By all means, knock on Vassos's door and ask him, can you spend the weekend with him and his family for a donation to Children in Need or something like that. But good luck with the Whitstable Pearl, because it is one of those annoying things that people in Tellyland have made.
It is. I mean, I really do hope it does excite people about Whitstable. It is a gorgeous town.
Kerry, I love you. I think you're amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Seriously, well done on this show. Whitstable Pearl, acorn.tv, the best advert for Whitstable's ever had, other than Vassos Alexander banging on about it on the radio every single blimmin' day. Kerry, have a lovely weekend. Thanks for being on the programme.
You too.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You're awesome. Kerry Godleman is officially awesome still.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.